Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered, like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches, but there aren't, right?
Right, because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points. Perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Gloria Bettini is a globally respected spiritual guide, psychic medium, astrologer, and transformational teacher whose life mission is to empower humanity to heal, transcend limitations, and step into their most authentic selves. Gloria facilitates profound experiences that bridge the seen and unseen worlds through her consciousness development training program, one-on-one mentorship, transformative readings, and guided meditation. She helps people reconnect with their intuitive intelligence, process grief, heal from trauma, including your own journey through severe OCD and emotional abuse, and reclaim their inner power. Gloria's work encompasses spiritual guidance, energy healing, past life exploration, and conscious living practices, all aimed at guiding souls towards an expanded future. She offers courses on tarot, oracle cards, and mediumship, creating sacred spaces where vulnerability is honored and deep healing becomes possible. Wow, there's a lot there. What does it mean when you hear that, when you hear everything that you do, do you find yourself thinking, gosh, yeah, that is a lot?
I love it because I from an astrology point of view, my chart has a lot of energies in. So it makes a lot of sense. There's a lot there. It makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I think it's just part of who I am. I like to learn a lot and explore a lot. As you can see behind me, I read a lot as well. Yeah. So it's, I think it's all part of me. So it doesn't surprise me now.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for giving us some of your time today. It's really, really.
Thank you.
Really, really welcome. I know people are going to love to hear from you. And when I'll finish, I'll put some notes in the short chat so you can find Gloria's amazing website and find out more about her. But yeah, so you've described yourself as being on a mission to empower humanity, which is a big mission. And I wonder if you could take us back to what you see as the beginning. What were the first signs or experiences that awakened you to your psychic and mediumistic abilities?
I think, first of all, that psychic abilities and all this stuff, these are not gifts. I really don't, you know, this is something we can all do. Let's just make that clear. Okay, let's just make that clear. This is something that we can all do. We all have an intuition, you know, and it's about how you develop it, how you train it. Yes, it's true. Some people, when they're born, are very much, you know, more naturally open to certain experiences. And perhaps I was, you know, one of these people in certain ways. But it's not something that, oh my goodness, I've never felt like I could speak to the dead when I was little. Therefore, that's not possible for me. That's not it. Yeah. So I really want to take away this misconception that they have to be gifts, because they're not, because this is how we're all made. You know, we all have the senses. The way that it was for me, I was always very, 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 very sensitive to other people, to energies. And I always felt a bit strange about people's passing because I didn't necessarily feel them pass. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like, well, yeah, I can see that they're not moving. You know, I can see that their body is not here anymore. I can see that that's, you know, that's obvious. But I never not felt them. You know what I mean? Like, I never felt that they were not there anymore. And so it was a very strange thing. Even when I lost my grandpa, which by that time I was 17, 18, so I was already, you know, almost an adult. And even then I kept going around, but I'm like, but I can feel him. I can, come on. Like, he's, you know, it was so evident to me. However, I was very disconnected for a very long time. Like life experiences, you know, relationships, a lot of insecurities, a lot of bullying, a lot of these sort of things made me disconnect from that and then get lost for a very long time. And then after I chose to change my life, then this part of my life reopened again. So yes, I did feel it in childhood, but I was quite disconnected very early. Yeah. Yeah.
It's very interesting to hear you say that we all have the potential to have psychic abilities, or we all have them. And so do you think then that we... And I count myself in this group, that we perhaps sense something, have an intuition, have a feeling, have a sensation, and we just ignore it and think, oh, we just sort of shake our heads and just dismiss it, as opposed to leaning into it. And is it the leaning in that almost opens up our abilities?
It absolutely does, yeah. What happens, I think it's a mixture of things. I believe that the most obvious thing is that we live in a society that is designed in a certain way and is designed for us to look outside instead of inside. And so when you start with that from such a young age, whether it's, you know, comparison or whether it's, you know, the media, you know, social media or whichever other media, everything that it disconnects you straight away, right? It disconnects you from your inner experience. And if you don't have, because obviously, you know, the first 7 years of our lives make up a lot of the future, you know, a lot of it from like a brain development point of view, from an emotional, you know, intelligence, like there's a lot that happens in the first 7 years. So if you feel connected, but then it's not validated, or maybe the environment that you're in, it's not open to certain things, then your default is to dismiss it. You know, because it's not being nurtured, yeah. It's not being recognized, right? And so I don't think we intentionally do it. I think it's just a result of the environment very often that we're in. Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess we're sort of taught that we have five senses and that's it. And everybody knows, well, hopefully many people know that we have many, many more than that. But we're sort of taught those very pragmatic, sort of, what's the right word, almost tangible senses, right? You can see, you can hear, you can do all that sort of stuff. And the rest of it, we don't get to see. It's really interesting. So I lost my mum 2 years ago and my dad this year. And I haven't necessarily felt I've had messages or feelings from them, but, and this is going to sound really, really silly, but I see robins, the bird robin, almost every time I go out, and I always feel that's my mum's presence in a way. It sounds so silly.
It's not.
When I say it out loud, but it just has that. It doesn't make me feel in bad in any way. It makes me feel quite nice, and I sort of see the robin, and the robin sort of, you know, maybe is quite close to me, and then sort of flies off or whatever. It's not necessarily because the robin's trying to tell me something. Mum's trying to tell me something. It just feels that her, particularly my mum, rather than my dad for some reason, feels that her, that's almost a physical manifestation of her presence. Does that make any sense?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. You're like, it seems silly to say this. I was like, to you, to me, this is perfectly natural.
thank you for saying
this
that.
This is perfectly natural and perfectly normal, you know. Let me show you here, like how your intuition is talking to you, right? You've probably gone on walks many, many times in your life and seen plenty of robins, right? Of robins. And your intuition, your senses didn't really register anything about them other than, oh, there's a cute robin, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe your subconscious.
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points, perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. the perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Even bypassed them, you know, like so many times you must have gone on walks and not even noticed any of them, right? But your mother passes, and then all of a sudden there's this awareness that you're like, ooh, I am seeing so many Robins. And for some reason, my awareness or my intuition is making my mom come to mind. You know, it's almost like you would say that you're sensing her energy, you know, and her energy is in, you know, in this occasion, in this specific situation, communicating to you or trying to reach out to you through a Robin, right? This is perfectly natural. This is exactly what it is. It doesn't mean that your mom is a Robin. It just means right? It just means that her energy is choosing to connect with you and to communicate with you through that, because that's what's visible to you. That's what you understand. Right. The way I see the quote unquote afterlife or the other side, which is not another side, by the way, they're not someplace else. Like, we're all in the same place. We're all here, all in the same place. The other side is right here. It's just a matter of vibration and energy and frequencies. Right. So we are the lucky ones because we speak the spoken language, right? Or even if somebody cannot speak, they use sign language, right? So, but we use something that we can hear or we can see. Unfortunately, without their physical body, their soul doesn't have this medium anymore. Energy cannot express itself through the physical body. However, it can still express itself. So to me, the passing of someone is not the end of anything. To me, is a change in language. It's a change in the conversation that we're having. It's a change in the way that we're speaking to each other. And I'm saying we are the lucky ones because they have no other choice than using the language of energy, because we're their energy, right? There's no, from what we know, like that's it, right? But us, we can learn it. We can speak, we can use sign language, we can use visual things, but we can also learn the language of energy because we're all born with an intuition. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it is. It is. It's also amazing that, and I don't know why this is, whether this is almost corporate science has sort of stopped us expanding this part of our consciousness. Because you think if people hear this and listen and think, wow, and it's an amazing area of your inner being to explore, isn't it? But I guess because my son's 15, my daughter's 18, and certainly none of this is taught in school at all. I mean, they do religion and theology and all ethics and philosophy and those sort of things, but none of this seems to be taught in school at all. You wonder why it's almost intentionally suppressed by society, and why society maybe isn't that comfortable with this sort of these feelings and these thoughts. You can't imagine a politician talking about this very openly. No. I don't know why. Maybe they're sort of scared of the response that they would get. Why is society generally closed off to this sort of thinking?
I've seen a quote, and I don't want to, I suggest the listeners to double check if I'm correct in saying who the quote is by. I believe it was from Rockefeller, but I'm not 100% sure. But the quote goes that school is made to create employees, not free thinkers. Yeah.
So that's whether he said it or not, whether they say it is very wise.
Yeah.
But you're saying it now, so yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and so I feel like it's like anything that is called a system, you know, like the school system, the government system, you know, all this sort of stuff. They have an agenda of, in some way, shape, or form, control an organization, which in some way it's needed. Of course, we need, you know, we're, you know, billions of people on the planet. We need some form of organization and systems to keep all of this in control. But I think that there's an element of it which I really link to disconnecting to the self, like disconnection to the self, which is that a lot of people that choose that path choose it for the wrong reasons. And so we have people in charge that are in charge not because they want to make a difference, but they are in charge because of a personal agenda. And when you have so many people in charge for a personal agenda, then control becomes very important, because the more power they have, the more they can control other people. And if they can control other people for their own benefit rather than for the benefit of the people, then obviously it's very, very convenient that the people are disconnected from themselves. Very convenient, because then, you know, then you just have people that follow orders. And then perhaps there's a when I was saying I'm a communicator at the you know, at the beginning, when you asked, I did study media communications, so it is part of my background in a way. But there's always an agenda. Like, don't we have to be responsible in our way, in a way, like for ourselves, to not take everything at face value the way that it's been said to us. We have to be interested in going deeper. You know, why has this book been chosen as a curricula in school and not this one? What would be the impact if this was chosen? You know what I mean? Or why do we have to do this as a society? Why do we have to conform to this? You know, what would happen if we didn't? I think that we have to, it's very important that we are a bit more discerning, I guess, a bit more discerning. Mm. So yeah, sorry, long-winded answer, but I think the answer is that, I think it's control, yeah. Mm.
Something I did want to ask about was astrology. I know it's central to a lot of what you do, and I forgive the ignorance of the question, but I wonder if you could give an explanation as to what astrology actually is. I think for many people, I say, well, I'm Pisces, and I'll look at my star sign in the newspaper and I'll read three lines, I'm going to have a good day, bad day, whatever, I'm going to be, yeah. What's real astrology?
Mm. So astrology to me is another language. Okay, yeah. Is another language. So think of it as, okay, so there's one principle that we hopefully all know that is true, is that everything is energy, right? Everything is energy, and everything has energy. So we exist in this universe that is made up of energy. Now, not all energy is the same. Yeah. So like, for example, you and I are made of energy, but you are expressing your energy in a certain way and I'm expressing my energy in a certain way, right? Which means that we probably have different vibrations, perhaps, right? Different frequencies.
Yeah.
And so if you think about planet Earth, floating rock, you know, in the universe, in our solar system.
Corporate megastores are spending millions lobbying DC politicians on one-sided policies that send small businesses tumbling. They want to enact harmful credit card mandates that take resources away from your local credit union and community bank, leaving Main Street businesses with less access to credit, making it harder for your family to pay for everyday goods like gas and groceries. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
And if you think again about the solar system, it is all this bunch of planets, you know, celestial bodies, all perfectly organized in a certain, you know, following a certain pattern of movement, you know. If the moon wasn't where it is, it would have massive consequences to the Earth, right? There would be floods, there'll be, you know, loads. If the sun wasn't where it is, again, massive consequences, planet would die. If Mercury wasn't where it is, massive consequence, right? Because as a solar system, so everything is interconnected in a way that it functions perfectly, and we are able to have this beautiful planet and life here because of so many energies interacting, right? Okay, so that's the basic, that everything is energy and we're part of this beautiful system that is perfectly balanced, in which, in the way that we're in the way in which all the celestial bodies communicate between each other. Okay. Astrology simply interprets the expression of the different celestial bodies. So the energy of the sun is very different from the energy of the moon, right? The sun not being there would cause very different things than the moon not being there, for example, right? Pluto, far, far away, has a very different shape, very different energy. It follows a different pattern of movement. It follows a different, you know, orbit kind of thing. Same for Mercury, same for Jupiter, very different energies. So what astrology does is take, is give these energy an explanation, like an interpretation, a language, right? So the sun represents this. The moon represents this. Mercury represents this. When we are born in this beautiful planet of ours, we come out. If I am born in London on July 12th, which is when I was born, July 12th, 1985, actually, let's say this, July 12th, 1985, I was born in Tuscany, Italy, at a specific time. And then somebody else on July 12th is born at a different time in the same year, but they're born in Tokyo. My position on the Earth, according to the universe and the planet out there, will have received a certain energy, which is very different from the person that's born in Tokyo, because they would be in a different position according to the planets, right? And so the moment that we're born, we absorb these energies that are available to us from all of the planets outside. So what astrology does is simply calculating where the planets, the planet's position in the sky at the moment that you were born, and says, these were the energies available. These were the energies present at your specific location at the specific time in the moment that you landed this Earth. This is what they mean. This is what the sun means. And this is what it means that it was in this position, in this, going through this constellation, right? This is what it means. This is what Mercury means. And when you bring them all together, they create a beautiful blueprint of your personality, right? And now you can be like, okay, well, you can believe this or not believe this. You can be like, oh, it's a bit far-fetched. You can, you know, you can believe whatever you want. You know, anybody can believe whatever they want. What I find amazing, and the reason why I use it so much, is that when I started actually aligning my life to that blueprint, my jaw dropped. Literally, my jaw dropped. And I started like, okay, so let's say I'm a Cancer sun. Like, my sun is in the sign of Cancer. My Mercury is in the sign of Leo, and I have it in a specific position in my birth chart. And I'm like, and I'm going through life feeling connected to these energies and thinking, you know, but I feel that people, and I know that they're dead, but they're not. Like, I can feel them, da da da. And it turns out I'm like 30 years old, and I look at my astrology blueprint, and my astrology blueprint says, well, you're actually a bridge between two worlds. So it makes a lot of sense that you sense dead people. I'm like, how did it know? How is it possible that this was written already? And in so many other things in my life, like the communication, you know, we were talking about like the variety of things. And the more I read and the more I study my own blueprint, I was like, I cannot believe, like, this is literally it. Like, this is who I am, you know? And it's not about predicting the future. It's simply about being conscious of what kinds of energy are available. And it's all about awareness. If you're aware of what kinds of energies are available, you can choose what to do with them. You can use them or not use them. It's completely your choice. I find that using them is incredibly helpful to me. and to the work that I do, for example. Incredibly helpful, you know. And sometimes even you know, my partner, he is not into astrology, but every now and then, oh, because obviously I check his stuff and everything, and I was like, oh, you know, babe, now it feels like you're going through this kind of cycle at the moment, and this is possibly, the energies might make you feel this way. And he's like, whoa, no way. So yeah, this is what's available right now. What are you going to do with that? You know? So I think it's simply, so what actually is astrology? I think it's simply giving us the opportunity to be aware of what energies are available to us and what we want to do with them. And I find that using them, it's amazing. I find that using them, it's amazing and incredibly helpful. So I aligned my whole life to it. And it's incredible. It's really, yeah, speechless about that.
I love the idea of that we're all born with access to this blueprint. Because they often say, you know, when you have children or when you're born, you don't come with a instruction manual, a guide. But I guess you do in a way. You do come with this blueprint that and I guess once you understand it and reflect upon it, it helps you know when is a good time to make a life-changing decision, when perhaps it's not a good time, when is a good time to end a relationship, start a relationship. It's about making the best of what we have, really, I suppose. Sure. And why wouldn't you want to explore that? So did your and if you're uncomfortable about talking about this, and then we're happy to skip over it, but did your astrology and knowledge of who you are, did that help you heal from the emotional abuse I know that you suffered from? Did that help you recognize that you were worth so much more than that?
It helped me understand myself. It helped me understand myself, and it helped me understand certain experiences in my life for sure. And it also helped me understand what was the best way possible for me to heal, you know, which is actually, it's why I use astrology so much with my clients as well, because I might think that the best way to heal, for example, is somatic work. But then I might come across a client that is not resonating with that at all. And then what can I do to help them? So I think that the solution is not for us to come up with a solution that is good for everyone, but I think it's for the person that guides to help understand the energy of the person that they're trying to help and adapt themselves to them, you know, because we're not all the same.
No, absolutely.
You know, we're not all the same. And it's the same thing in school, if you think about it, right? So we have one system that works for a lot of kids, but there's a lot of kids that are absolutely trapped in that system. It does not work for them. And there's a reason for it. It's not the kids, you know, it's not that there's something wrong with them. It's simply that the system only caters for so many people. For so many types of people, if you will, you know.
Yeah.
But we all have different energies. And so the reason why I use astrology so much is because service is a really, really important part of my life. You know, service, especially helping people come home to themselves. And I want to give them my all. Like when I work with someone, I'm like, I want to give you the best experience you can possibly receive. I cannot do that if I tell them, oh, this is what I do. You come to me and this is what I do. And you have to accept this system that I have. No, I adapt my system to you because I want to find out who you are. It's not about me. It's about you. I want to find out who you are, what your experiences are, what you're trying to heal from. And then I'm using your blueprint to understand what is your best way to respond, because it's your life. It's not mine. Right. Mm-hmm. So I can use my skills and my intuition to help you through the journey, but the way that I use them will always be adapted to who you are, because you're the point. It's not me, the point, right? And I think that if we approach this with so much, like if we approached so many more things in life this way, I think we would have so much more harmony and so much more openness but openness towards each other, but also openness like towards ourselves, as in like, it's okay to be me, you know? And some people think it's not okay to be them simply because nobody's ever seen them or validated them, you know? And what a shame is that? You know, we are all here deserving of a human experience. Why would we want to put everybody into boxes? Why wouldn't we want to free, you know? Why wouldn't we want to allow people to be authentically themselves? I honestly think that the reason why there's so many issues in the world, and there's reason why that, you know, there's so many issues with governments and the people that rule, is because the people that are there ruling are completely disconnected from themselves. Completely disconnected. I feel like there's so much like insecurity. I'm like, what happened to you when you were 7? You know, I see like so many of these leaders, and I'm like, who didn't see you? Who did something so bad to you that you have to be out there and take it out on this whole, you know, country? Or like, what happened to you? You know, and I don't want that to happen like that anymore. And you know, and you know, some of these people that are up there, and you know, in governments and leaders and stuff, some of them might not be open to things. So I think we have to start from us. We have to start from the people, so that we then can go up and you know, start from quote unquote the bottom. I don't think we're at the bottom of anything, but you know what I mean.
So a couple of things with that. So one, I think it's really interesting how many of our political leaders went away to boarding school when they were sort of 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with boarding school. I'm sure there's some wonderful ones, but it is a system, and you have to thrive within that system, and you have to behave in the way that particular school teaches you. And then the second thing was, and it felt you were talking directly to me. So I really, really didn't enjoy school at all. I'm sure I was a pain for the teachers, because I would never accept something on face value. Right, this write it down, blackboard, here's the answer, right, the answer is 10, or the answer is Jerusalem, or the answer is China, or whatever. I thought, well, but what, why is that? Could it not be another way? And I'm sure that was so annoying. So I was disenchanted with school. I moved schools quite a few times because of my parents' jobs, and then I just didn't have any thought that I was academic at all. And it was only when, gosh, 15 years later, I went back and did a master in sustainability and MBA, and I'm just about to start a PhD. So it's almost this age now, I finally validated, hey, maybe you weren't stupid after all. Maybe it's just the way that they were trying to teach this class of 30 people, and trying to teach them all in the same way is far easier for them rather than this one kid saying, but couldn't there be a different way? Isn't another interpretation of it this? And you see the teachers rolling their eyes. But no, the textbook says this. And that's absolutely it. It's a really powerful phrase when you said that you help people come back to themselves. Mm. And I think a lot of us, perhaps, and even when you were saying it, I really felt you saying it. I think a lot of us don't realize that when we've become distant from who we truly are, really. We've put on this mask or facade, or we've become the person that society, our family, our friends, our loved ones almost demand of us, and haven't sort of stepped away from that. I thought, there's no question there. It's just really interesting when you're saying it. I already felt the words as opposed to just hear them, if that makes sense. Something else I want to say, this is almost like a quiz now, but I also wonder if you could, he said something really interesting when you said that when we pass, or when we leave our earthly bodies as such, we don't go somewhere different, we're all together. And I never really thought about that before, but I just wondered if you could explain what it means to be a psychic medium, or to be able to connect. And then as an add-on to that question, because you're so in tune, does it ever feel overwhelming that there's just, that you have the possibility, or that so many spirits are trying to connect with you, and can you manage to almost switch it off or tune it out? I just wondered, how do you sort of cope with such an overwhelming abundance of feeling and intuition.
Yeah. So with regards to the first question, what does it mean to be a medium, was it? Yeah, what does it mean to me?
Yeah.
I see myself simply as a translator. I feel that's all I am. Literally, would like a medium, literally. I feel like that's, you know, I'm literally like the middleman. And so I feel like I have somebody in front of me that wants to speak, you know, to their mom, dad, you know, brothers, and they have not yet learned to read the language of energy or speak the language of energy. And therefore I'm doing that for them. This is literally how I see myself. Again, like I'm very service oriented. So I feel like I'm here to help. I can speak this. Let's do it. You know, literally that. I love it so much. I enjoy it. It like mediumship really is one of my absolute favorite things to do from so many different points of view. I find it incredibly interesting and stimulating because it's, you know, translating the language of energy is so cool because I have to put into English something that I am actually perceiving through sounds, colors, images, sensations in my body. And it's so cool because I'm like trying to take all of that experience and put it into words, you know? And it's literally like all encompassing, at least the way that I read, you know, it's because everybody's got their own unique ways. And the way that I read is very much, yeah, all encompassing. And so it's so fun and stimulating for me to get all of.
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points. Perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
These, you know, messages and things that I get to like say in a different language. I really enjoy that. I love it. Is it overwhelming? Yes, I'm an incredibly sensitive person. Always been. I need a lot of time on my own, a lot of time on my own. And I need to cry a lot. I cry. That's my way to release energy. I don't cry for sadness. I cry for release, really. But I have boundaries, so I am not constantly connected. I choose when I open myself up or not. And I think that's very important. So if there's anybody actually in the audience, because I know a lot of people struggle with that, to, you know, a lot of people sense a lot of stuff. And then, you know, I cannot imagine going to the supermarket and not being switched off. Like I can't. It would be incredibly overwhelming. And sometimes it is, because there are some places that I can resist like half an hour and then I have to go. But in terms of like intentionally receiving the clear messages, no, I want to do it when it's intentional. I want to sit down. I want it to be a certain experience. So I keep very, very strict boundaries, I guess. Yeah, very strict boundaries for sure.
And how long does it take to, even as I'm saying that, I know it's a silly question, how long does it almost take to learn to interpret the feelings, colors, smells, sensations that...
It depends how much you practice. Yeah, it depends how much you practice, yeah. Because when you're learning, again, like language of energy is so interesting because you're not just learning the language of energy, you're learning about yourself too. You're learning how you speak it. You know, it's not a universal language. It's like A means this, you know, B means this. You know, it's not like that. You learn the way that you speak it. So the more you practice and the more you allow yourself to be in that space, the quicker you will learn, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Practice is key.
So there's something we talk about a lot on the podcast is intimacy. And I think intimacy often gets reduced to physical or romantic connections, but I think listening to you, it's very clear that intimacy is far more expansive than that. And I wondered how you view intimacy in the context of spiritual and energetic connection.
Well, I must say to you that my life experience, I feel like the way I experience life is very intimate, because everything feels super close to me. Like, I feel like it's a very, I think I was talking to a friend the other day and I said to her, I have such an internal experience of life. But I think what I actually meant was what you just said. I feel like I have an intimate experience of life. I feel like everything is touching me in very closely. You know, I feel that's what I feel. What role does it have, or how does it express itself? I think it's about how much you allow yourself to be open. You know, how, you know, it's definitely not only romantic. It's definitely not only in relationships. There, you know, there's so many people around the world that do not have an intimate experience within themselves. And that's what I mean when I say coming home, right? That there's a disconnection for so many reasons. We're not obviously judging or attacking anyone. I'm saying that there is such an experience that so many people have of being so disconnected with themselves that they do not have an intimate relationships with themselves. And I think it's because of so many reasons. It could be because, again, like, not non-validation. Maybe they're not allowing themselves to receive love. And it's scary. Honestly, it's very scary. I think that possibly the scariest thing that we get to do as human beings is allow ourselves to receive love. That's got to be the scariest thing in the world. But yeah, sorry. So I feel like it's about how open we are to vulnerability, because intimacy is vulnerable, whichever, you know, in a relationship, in this kind of work within ourselves, in our subconscious, you know, exploration of ourselves. It's about allowing yourself to be open and receive something in a place that it's really inside of you, that you are so pushed to protect, you know. But I think that intimacy is possibly one of the most freeing things that we can open ourselves up to. It opens us to grow, I think. It opens us to see ourselves and to let ourselves be seen. I think it's very linked to one's soul's path, you know, one's authenticity. Very much linked to that, for sure.
It's interesting you say that. So I talked to a tantra coach a few months ago, and she was saying something very, very similar. And she was sort of saying that it's very hard to have a fulfilling and intimate physical relationship with somebody unless you have a physical and intimate relationship with yourself. So whether that's a self-pleasure practice or it's the ability to be able to say, I love myself, it's very hard then to allow yourself to open up to feel the love of somebody else. Because as you said, it is a very, very vulnerable state we put ourselves in when we not only give love to somebody else, but as you say, accept the love of somebody else. I think that's a big, big thing. Like I said, there's 8 billion people on the planet. Typically, people are in a relationship with, you know, one person. I know some people have polyamorous relationships, maybe a couple of people, but still, we are very, very vulnerable in opening ourselves up to accept the love, almost a nurture the love of somebody else.
Well, let me say something there. I think that being in a relationship with someone doesn't necessarily mean being open to receiving love.
Okay.
No. I think that the way that I see it is, having been in a toxic relationship of 15 years, I thought I was receiving love, but I was not. And I was in a deep state of self-hate throughout that. And I think that I was literally receiving what I thought was possible for me to receive, which was not love, right? I think that I was so insecure. I was really struggling with generalized anxiety, really struggling with OCD. As I said, you know, I was bullied in high school. secondary school and high school, I felt incredibly inferior to a lot of my peers. I ended up going to a really good school, but everyone was of a certain financial background, and I really was not. And so I felt incredibly inferior because of that, because it was very evident. I felt like I basically felt like I needed to survive. I was in survival mode, I think, since the age of 12, probably between the age of 12 and the age of 30. And so I thought very little of myself, and I was incredibly insecure. And I think that I ended up being in that relationship because that's what I thought was possible for me. But that did not mean that it was love.
No.
Absolutely not. You know, I feel like I'm in a very loving relationship now, but for me to be able to be in the loving relationship I am in now, I needed to show up for myself. I really needed to do that. I really needed to step up and be like, okay, we got to heal this. You know, this 40 OCD rituals a day that are really affecting your life, this is not good. You know, this can't be life. You know, I had to change my whole mindset, what I thought about myself, like how much I was open, how much I thought I deserved, my relationship with my mom, my relationship with my dad, like so much. And then I got to a point where I was able to welcome this person in my life, and I felt really love, and actually I felt that was intimacy. And then looking back at what I thought was intimacy before, or love before, I was like, not a chance. No, that was not it at all. Yeah.
Oh, thank you for sharing that.
It's all right.
what was the catalyst for finally leaving the toxic relationship? Because it was 15 years. It was quite a long time.
And I was 18 when we started dating. So I was so young as well. Yeah. I feel it was a mixture of things. So as I said, I was in that, you know, generalized anxiety, OCD kind of space. And I didn't have any awareness at the time that I was in a toxic relationship. Zero awareness of that. I just thought that simply relationships are tough and you have to make them work. That's what I thought. And then I got to this place where I, you know, anxiety was really, really ruling my life. And I thought, I actually do not know what's going to happen if this carries on. Like, I have no idea. So much self-hate. So I literally, yeah. So I went and started working with a coach who specialized in anxiety disorders. And we started working on the OCD, and about a year later, a year and a couple of months later, I had dropped 20 out of the 40 OCD rituals that I had. And what that gave me was space. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, my head had space, oxygen, you know, space to see. And in that space, I started noticing things that I had not noticed in the, you know, 13 years prior. And I was really seeing how, you know, starting to like second guess, is this actually love? Like, am I being treated well here? Or, you know, what if this continues for the rest of my life? Because I was married. You know, what if this continues? What if we end up being together, you know, until like our 80s? Is this okay? Is this how I want my life to be? And all of a sudden I had space to answer the questions, and I didn't feel like the answers were what I wanted them to be, you know? And then around the same time, we went on a trip with my ex-husband. We went on a trip to the United States, and we visited Monument Valley. You know where that is? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful place. And I always wanted to go there, and I made sure like I booked like some nice things for when we were there. So I booked a horseback ride. And then for the morning after, I booked a sunrise tour in the valley. And it was at 7 in the morning, nobody there. It was just us and the Navajo guide who was taking us to do the tour. And she stopped at this beautiful point in the valley where loads of people stop and queue to take pictures, but obviously 7 in the morning, nobody's there. And it's called John Ford Point. And it's a very, it's probably one of the most famous, you know, pictures that you can take of there. And I sat there, you're sat on basically like on a rock suspended, you know, on the thing. And you have this beautiful deserted valley in front of you with these huge, you know, things in front of you. And I'm like, oh my God, all of a sudden, that's also spiritual land, right? So all of a sudden I felt so small. I felt, oh my God, I am completely insignificant. Like the problems that I'm having compared to what life is, to what spirit is, like it's all figure outable, you know? It's like you can figure it out. You can get out of this. I don't know what it was. I think it was just that it was so majestic, you know, to be there, that it had such an impact. And I thought, okay, Gloria, you've been lying to yourself. No more. So I made a promise. I cried. I made a promise there that I was like, from this moment on, I'm never going to lie to myself ever again. And then 6 months later, I left the relationship. I sort of got my life into, you know, gear. I looked after my body, lost the weight. I became more confident in myself. And then I got to a point where I was like, that's it. I'm leaving. Goodbye. This is not love. This is not it. You know, and it was hard because obviously if you know narcissistic dynamics, they make it very hard for you to live. And so I was very lucky to have some very supportive people around me that offered me help. And I don't know what I would have done without them. I feel very, very lucky. But I did prepare myself, you know, in these 6 months that it took me to leave the relationship. I feel like I had a lot of psychological preparation, and I didn't say anything to anyone. I just like, I need to do this for myself and keep it protected until I'm ready. And then when I was ready, I just went. Yeah.
Sadly, a lot of people never have that. Never have the sort of feeling feeling have the strength to do that, really. So so after that relationship, how did you then find the courage to enter a new and different relationship? Was that very hard?
It was at the beginning, because I thought that I needed to be by myself for longer. And then I felt that actually, yes, I had left my relationship, but I actually emotionally and psychologically, I feel like I had left it way earlier than I left it physically. Okay. That makes sense. Yep. You know, I felt like I was out of that for a long time. And so I was very scared, because I didn't even want to date at the beginning. I just dated for fun, really, because I had this friend at the time. He was just like, come on, go on Tinder, come on. He was just like, you know, trying to like push me to put myself out there and stuff. I was like, you know what, for the lols, why not, you know, for the lols. And so, and then I end up texting with this guy who is now my partner. And there was something that made me feel incredibly safe about him. But he was like very direct and very straightforward. But obviously I was a bit, not that I was scared, but I was like, oh, do I need more time by myself? Do I need not, you know? And then I was talking to my coach at the time. I was like, how do I figure this out? And so she coached me through it. And I ended up asking him, can you tell me, I said, what life do you see? If we make this, you know, official, and we actually, like, can you tell me what life do you see? And he described it to me. And like, as like, what life do you see? I mean, like the average perfect day. like what happens in the day to day. I didn't want to, you know, we're going to go do this, you know, I didn't want, you know, and I was like, okay, that feels actually like what I want. That feels very peaceful. And I have to say that he's the only man in my life that has not broken a promise. Only man. The only man in my life that has not broken a promise. And I love that about him. Like, if he does what he said he's going to do, which is very important to me. Very important to me. So I feel like I have that. I had that trust at the beginning because I felt really safe. But obviously coming from that, I was like, ooh, I feel safe with this. But am I okay? Is it just infatuation? Is it just the beginning? You know, it's just like the honeymoon period. You know, I was very much in my head. And then I was like, no, this feels like what it is. And since then, he's not broken a promise. So, yeah. Yeah. I feel very good, very safe and loved. Yeah.
It's good.
There was a lot to work through, yeah? There's a lot to work through, you know, because I was coming from a narcissistic relationship. So every time, like, I had a lot of triggers. So in the first couple of years of our relationship, I was, oh my God, you know, he's done this. Does it mean that's that? Does it mean that's that? You know, there's a lot to heal when you've been in a toxic relationship, like a lot. But he supported me through everything. So, yeah.
And for people that are listening to this and they're hearing, or they're almost feeling part of their own story being reflected back to them, and perhaps they recognize that, and maybe they've known it for a while, that they're not living authentically, they're not experiencing true intimacy, they're not feeling the love that they feel they deserve. It's a big question, but what would you say to those people? How do you almost make the first, because every journey starts with the first step, but what is the first step? What would you say to people that feel that something isn't quite right?
So it obviously is very different for different people, obviously, because we're all different. But one thing that I always find is a good way to start the journey home back to you is to actually start doing something that you love doing as a child. You need to, when we are in that situation that so much is out of flow, we need to see ourselves, because it's not actually what happens is that it's not us at like 35, 40, 45 that is suffering. It's us at 7, right? That's the problem, right? Mm-hmm. It's us at 7. And so going back, and I'm not saying that, you know, if you want to go to therapy and do a coaching journey and you feel ready for that, oh my goodness, please, absolutely, if you're ready for that. But a lot of people are not ready for that, for the big step. And so what you need to do is to make yourself feel like you're worth it. And so you're worth the try, you're worth the journey, you know, you're worth the healing. And so I find that if we give that 7-year-old self a little bit of space to just be themselves and to enjoy something, then they start feeling a little bit safer about exploring other things. Our problems is never here. There's always a root. Our problem is not in the present. The present is a symptom. The relationship is a symptom. Right? All of these are symptoms. So we need to go and have a look at the root, which is very likely when we're 7. So give that 7-year-old self a little bit of space. Maybe do something for 10 minutes every day that you enjoyed doing, whether it was drawing, reading, playing a video game, like whatever it is, something that you've not done in a very long time. And just give yourself that 10 minutes. Doesn't take much. 10 minutes. And allow yourself to have that little bit of space, and you will find that you're going to want to do it more and more and more and more and more. Because once you are being seen, then you want to be seen more, you know, you feel safer in that. And I think that that's very often a good way to just open up to the journey, which is not a huge commitment you know, because you're like, oh my God, I have to do like 5 years of therapy. And you're like, oh God, how do I start that? I don't want to, you know what I mean? But starting with something really small like that and start seeing yourself and giving yourself space, it's a great catalyst, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
Be interesting. Hopefully a lot of people listening and think, gosh, yeah, what was it? I mean, for me, when I was 7, it was reading. I used to, I read so voraciously and I inhabited so many different worlds and experiences and places and beings. And I was really in the book, really. And I came away from reading for many, many, many years. And then when I sort of got back into it again, it's like, my goodness, I can go to these places again. Yeah. And like, I always feel for people that don't read, I think, gosh, there's so many worlds out there that you can explore through the books of amazing authors and amazing writers and amazing poets. And there's so much out there. Or the same with drawing. And for some reason, I started drawing a couple of years ago. And I think I enjoyed it when I was 7 or 8. But I think when I was 7 or 8, I think my art teacher was probably quite dismissive of my efforts. Mm-hmm. And when you're 7 or 8 and somebody says, but that doesn't look like that. But a fruit or that doesn't look like that. It's like, oh, it sort of destroys you a little bit. But then when you get a little bit older, I think, well, it doesn't really matter what somebody else sees in my drawing, my picture, my sculpture, my carving, whatever. It's what I feel, what I'm putting into it. So now I think that's a really, really, really interesting way to, what was it when I was 7 years old that brought me joy?
Yeah.
I do that now.
Well, like with the reading. That was reading for me too. Yeah. Mm.
You've been super generous with your time. I've just got 2 more questions, if that's okay. So I wondered a little bit about tarot and oracle cards, how they're used as tools for self-discovery. And are they about predicting a future or the future? Or how are they properly used?
Definitely not about predicting the future. Definitely not. Definitely, definitely not. And do not ever, for anybody listening, please, please, please do not go to anyone that tells you that tarot can predict the future. And I'll tell you why in a second. So tarot and oracle cards are tools to read energy, right? So astrology, we talked about how astrology is another way of interpreting energy. So tarot cards, oracle cards, pendulum, you know, have you ever seen the pendulum? That all of these are physical tools to read energy. Yeah. So difference between tarot and oracle cards usually are created with a specific intention. So they are not all the same. There's thousands and thousands of decks out there. I mean, I have up there, I have so many up there on that shelf. And they're all with different energies. I mean, I have a Native American one up there. I have an astrology one up there. I've got one that's just simply about different kinds of energies. And they are created by different authors. And the authors give the cards certain meanings. So then you shuffle the cards and you set an intention of what message am I meant to receive today? And then you shuffle the cards, you pull the card, and then there's a booklet with each oracle deck, and you see the message for the day, let's say. This is like easy way to use that. Tarot is a bit different because tarot decks have a specific, they all have the same cards. Even though there's different designs, tarot is a specific deck. And the cards are created with, have been created with a specific intention. So is a way of putting into images energy, right? Okay. We put energy into images. So you've got 4 suits in the tarot. You have the cups, the swords, the coins, well, the pentacles and the wands. Every suit represents something different. So cups represent emotion, swords represent the mind, pentacles represent physical life, and wands represent action. And then within that, you've got the ace to the king. And that's a journey within the suit. So you go from the ace, which is a new beginning, and then you get the 2, the 3, it sort of builds up. And then you get to the king, which is the mastery of that specific journey, right? The expression that. And then there's another part of the deck, which is called a major arcana, which is 21 individual cards that are archetypes. So we have like the tower, the devil. We have the empress. We have this sort of thing. And so you have to know a little bit more about the structure of the tarot in order to be able to read it. But it essentially simply interprets energy. So you can ask different questions. Your questions and your intention is always what directs the energy. So I could, you know, have a tarot deck and be like, okay, so I'm exploring this spiritual part of my life, and I would like to see what energy is around this specific practice. So let's say I'm taking up, I don't know, like mediumship, right? So I want to explore mediumship. What is the energy around me picking up mediumship right now? And simply the cards give you a visual for what the energy is. So you could get an ace that could be like, oh, wonderful new beginning, you know, like it's go for it. Or you could get something like maybe like a more dramatic card that says, well, do it, but expect that maybe it's a bit turbulent, you know, but they don't predict the future. Absolutely not. They are tools to read energy. They give you an interpretation of what energy you have around you, around a certain subject right now. And even if we say, because for example, I do on my YouTube channel, I do a forecast for the week, or I do like the 12 months, pick a card for a month, you know, it doesn't mean that the cards are telling us what's going to happen. You know, it simply says, well, you know, what's the tarot forecast for this week? Oh, it's going to be a lot about new beginnings, and it's going to be a lot about reflection on what you want to bring in the new year. And but be careful that maybe there's a little bit of tiredness here and there. I'm not predicting that something's going to happen to you in your life. I'm just saying, this is what's available. What do you choose to do with it?
Yeah.
Right? So it's always important that we leave the agenda to the person that we're reading for. You know, you always have the power of choice. So if anybody is telling you, oh, I'm going to predict your future, be very careful, because only you can create your future and nobody else. Even if they tell you this is going to happen, don't believe them. Create it for yourself, which is even better. But yeah, essentially tools for interpreting energy. Yeah.
And are there such things as those bad spirits or negative connotations with readings, cards? I'm sure that there's, and not everybody is as trustworthy and open, authentic as you are. And are there bad actors out there that can make the cards? Do you understand what I'm trying to say? Is there any way that, gosh, I don't want to let any negative spirits into my life. I want to keep away any darkness. Is there any danger?
Yeah.
Of that?
So the first thing, I get asked this a lot by my students, you know, and what I teach is there is nothing in the spiritual world that can harm you more than something in the physical world. Okay. So let's keep that clear for sure. Yeah. Are there heavy energies out there? Are there negative quote unquote entities? Absolutely. That's why I think it's very important for us to have boundaries. You don't have to be scared of anything, because you might think, oh, you know, a negative entity is going to be something that possesses me, you know, and you might have that, you know, image of possession as something like The Exorcist shows us, you know, like very cinematic kind of way. It's not like that. Like a negative entity can express through us, for example, through addiction, right?
Yeah.
Or it can express us through a lack of boundaries or people pleasing, you know, like, why is it there? You know, these people pleasing, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a heavier energy that you might have around you, or maybe you're so sensitive and such an empath that maybe this, you have somebody with negative energy in your life and obviously very attracted to your empathy and your sensitivity that has simply decided to just be in your space. And this could be a family member, could be a friend, could be a coworker, right? So I highly recommend, that I think should be base for everyone, is just to open and close your energy every day. Clean it. You don't have to make a bit faff out of it. You know, you don't have to think that it's like, oh God, I have to go and for 30 minutes sit down and be like a monk. And no, it's all about intention. Intention directs your energy. So if you wake up in the morning, you can be like, okay, I'm going to set the intention now that I have a beautiful, I don't know, I use roses. So I use like a shield of roses around me. And I say, okay, I'm putting my protection roses around me today. And I set the intention that only love is going to filter through. That's it. I wear obsidian as well, which, you know, I love crystals. So I wear obsidian as well, which is a beautiful protective crystal. But you set the intention. And then the day, you know, before bed, I just, you know, close my eyes 5 minutes and be like, I set the intention to shower off all of the negative energies that I might have picked up today. That's it. You know, there are obviously deeper ways of doing that, deeper practices if you're up for that. But I feel like a lot of people maybe don't approach it because they're like, oh God, I have to do this for like an hour of my time. Or this. Yeah. You don't, you know, it can take as little as like 5 minutes. So clear your energy every day.
And my final question, and it's one I ask everybody, but it almost feels like the wrong question for you because of lots of things that you said. But what does the future hold for you?
Ooh.
What do you hope the future holds for you?
What do I hope? I hope the future holds growth, exploration. Yes. I hope the future holds expansion. Yeah. Expansion, mm-hmm. growth, exploration. Yeah. I hope it holds that. And love, of course.
Love's important. Well, thank you so much for your time. I can just keep talking to you for hours. You're so lovely to talk to.
Right back at you. Yes.
it's been fascinating. It's been a fascinating just sort of glimpse into a world that all of us can inhabit if we just open our eyes and our hearts maybe a little bit more. I can't wait to listen back. So no, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This is very special.